must consent for a go. Yes means yes, no means no. You must consent for a go.
Say it loud, say it clear.
Immigrants are welcome here.
Say it loud, say it clear.
Immigrants are welcome here.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
We're here today for a special episode of First Gens. I'm Preen.
And I'm Sky.
And we're here with two amazing women that are involved in the Charlotte community. We're going to just go around the table. If you can just tell us your name and the organization that you're affiliated with.
Sure. So I'm Allie Caroni, and I am the philanthropy manager at our YWCA of Central Carolinas here in Charlotte.
And I'm Jan Anderson, and I'm president and founder of the Charlotte Women's March.
Awesome.
It's great to have you both here.
Thank you. It's just so exciting to be on a podcast.
Even though this is a special episode, we want to start with kind of one of our standard questions and just let us know how you identify.
I identify as female, she, woman, a white woman.
I identify as an older white woman, retired.
So how did you get involved with the civil work that you do?
Sure. So when I was in college, I was majoring in psychology. And about my junior year was when I kind of realized that I didn't really want to do anything with psychology. But it was a little bit late to make that decision. But I was also minoring in community health, which gave me the opportunity to, we actually had to do some internships with it could have been anything, but I chose to do two internships with local nonprofits, and I'm from upstate New York, so I was in a very rural part of the state, and I did two internships. One was with a church, actually. It was with a Unitarian Universalist church, and the goal of that, they had a community garden, and it was, we were trying to use all of the produce that was grown and donate it to local food banks and things like that. And so that was kind of my first experience with food banks. And then the other nonprofit that I worked for was called Garden Share, and they kind of did similar work. They had CSA programs and kind of just were trying to promote healthy food, make it affordable for all people. They had programs at the farmers market where you could use your EBT and food stamps for produce and things like that. So it was kind of just all that. And so I became very interested not only in food, but in nonprofit work. And it was kind of there that I decided that if I have to work in life, and I do, then I want to be doing something that is making a difference. Fast forward, I moved down to Charlotte in 2014, and I started working at United Way, which I don't know if you're familiar, but United Way kind of has an arm in not only the nonprofit world, but also the corporate world. They're raising money for 80 nonprofits here in Charlotte, and then they do that through workplace campaigns. So you're going into like the corporate world to raise money and then donate it out to these local nonprofits. And YWCA is a United Way partner agency. And so I got to learn at United Way about all the different nonprofits here in Charlotte. And so that's how I got to know about YWCA. The mission just really speaks to me. It's eliminating racism and empowering women, promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. So it's a big mission.
I've taken a different career path. After a 40-year career as a civil engineer, culminating in opening and running a Fortune 500 office here in Charlotte, I retired about 10 years ago. So it had always been me and the boys in the room. When Trump was elected and I listened to the rhetoric that was coming out of his mouth, I couldn't be silent anymore. And so I rented a bus, put 45 of my closest friends on it, and we went to D.C. and marched. And these were women in their 50s and 60s and 70s who had very successful careers. And we pretty much kept quiet and kept our heads down and had risen through the ranks in business. But now that many of us were retired, we felt we had a voice and we were going to use it now. So on the way back, there was a 7-hour bus ride, and I looked at these women and thought, well, this is an opportunity. Do you want to go forward with it? And all of the ladies said yes. Suzanne Fetcher from the McCall Center was on the bus. She says, I said, you can meet it up at the McCall Center. And I said, set a date. So the women selected 2 weeks from then. We had a meeting. The first meeting, 250 women showed up. Subsequent to that, we had about 600 members last year. And after this year's march, we've gotten to be 2,400 members total. So what got me motivated was the fact that all of us of my generation, retired women who've worked hard, is we're not going back.
Right.
You know, there's nothing good about what we came from. We have made it better, but it's not where we need to be. Mm-hmm. So the Charlotte Women's March was an opportunity that I have been fortunate to help get started and help these women who are just fantastic get our voices heard and do what we can to help make lives in society better for everyone in Charlotte.
What's really cool is that Skye and I have both participated, you know, in the Women's March.
Oh,
and we also have partnered with the YWCA and kind of have done some like cool like collaborations like with them. And so for us, I know that it's really important to not only have those organizations like established and in place within the community to just be present, but mm-hmm. in order to just know that you have a place and you have some kind of outlet that you can get involved in.
So feminism has gone through a number of waves and different evolutions and different taken up different spaces in society. So where do you think it stands now, and where do you see kind of the future of feminism?
I'll go first.
Big one. Big huge question.
I've no pressure. Thought about it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, back 50 years ago, we had the Women's Liberation Movement. Women's Lib was what we were called, and it was a little frightening to men because we were like, you know, sort of going out on our own for the first time. But to put it in perspective, as I was saying, you two went to UNC Chapel Hill. When I was applying to college, I couldn't be admitted to Chapel Hill because Chapel Hill did not admit women. And now it's, what, 60% women, I think, mm-hmm. something like that. So it wasn't ability that kept us out. And there were a lot of barriers to women. Doing some of the research, some of the things I'd forgotten were job listings for men's jobs and women's jobs. Well, I'm trained as an engineer. I didn't fit in a category, so it was always, I was sort of always outside the box. Women couldn't get credit cards back then. But because I was in the engineering school and it was assumed engineers were men, I got an application from NCNB, Nations Bank, for a credit card. So I was like, oops, that one didn't work either, did it? So I started questioning everything that I was told I couldn't do and found out, yeah, I could. So I got a job. I worked hard, always as an engineering consultant over the years. Kept quiet like my generation did because we had to prove that we would fit in and that we could do the work. The women in the, there were very few women in the ranks back then. In fact, I was usually the only senior woman in the room. And then 50 years later, we are today, and we've come a long way. There are a lot of women in the workforce now. Most of the schools that we couldn't get into are co-ed, so women can actually get the training they need to get the jobs that we all want. But there does seem to still be a glass ceiling. There seem to be still barriers in the workforce, barriers in society, that classify women as in a different category from men. And that's what we need to work on, is equality for all, I think.
No, definitely. We've like actually talked about that. We have like our round table that we have every season, we kind of switch it up. And the gap between, obviously, the gender gap, but then we also were talking about it even deeper and saw that there's a hierarchy with race as well, like within that's not only a financial like pay gap with like men and women, but you know, white women to Hispanic women and Black women to white women and Asian women to white women, and how all of that plays into, I think, our perspective and like outlook, and I think how it all kind of comes and joins together.
Yeah, I mean, one of the institutional barriers that I think persist is childcare. back when I was starting out, there wasn't much child care service available at all. So I was fortunate enough to be able to have someone come into my home and take care of my children while I worked, and I only worked part-time. But for many people, that's not an option because it's very expensive. And so women would choose, rather than work basically for nothing because everything they made went to pay for child care, they'd stay home with the child. And then when they try to reenter the workforce, it wasn't open to them.
Right.
So I think child care is a major issue in terms of for especially for the middle and lower ranks of the working folks is a major issue to women being able to enter the workforce and be retained in the workforce. But the second thing is, if a woman chooses to stay home with a child for a while and take care of small children, the children go to school eventually, and I don't see the structure of the workforce now reaching out to women who have formerly worked for an organization and calling them back, maintaining those contacts and asking them back. I mean, I was working for an engineering firm. These women were really well skilled and they were really good workers, and they'd have kids, and nobody would ever bother to follow up to see what happened to them.
I'm really appreciative that you brought that up, because it definitely is something I think is often overlooked as to just filtering into like the bigger, wider issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I'm glad that we are now, I think, as white women, recognizing the importance of intersectionality and, you know, that white women's experiences are different from Black women's experiences and different from gay women's experiences. And we can't, the feminist movement cannot just be in the viewpoint of the white woman, because that's just not the only experience. And so I think that's so important for all of us to recognize and to accept and, you know, to embrace. And I think that's the only way that we'll move forward, you know, is to embrace all different types of woman. And that's the only way that we'll really, you know, keep this going.
Yeah, no, definitely.
YWCA was actually the first organization in Charlotte to open a child care program for working women, and that was actually back in 1917, where Heist Brewery now is. That was the first child care center.
70 or 17?
17.
17.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
You said 17 years ago?
No.
1917.
I'm sorry.
100 yeah, years 100 ago.
I'm sorry. I don't know why. I was just like, yeah. What is happening? What is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Incredible.
I mean, they've kind of been in that space for a while, and today that's a big part of our programming is we have youth programs after school and all day summer programs. We serve 345 kids every day. They're located in neighborhoods, so they're we have partnerships with Parks and Rec departments and Housing Authority, so we're actually inside like a public housing community. So kids who live there can come after school, and the barrier of transportation is not there. So that's really important. And I mean, it's still not accessible to everyone. It needs to be something that should serve more than 345 kids every day, because there are obviously more who need it.
It's still making a difference. It's still affecting part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah. I thought it was really great that what you mentioned, Allie, about needing more inclusivity within this movement and within just how we see feminism and how we define that. And so like we did definitely like want to like get into that, because we wanted to just like talk to you all about, you know, why do you think it's so important to empower all women? Like, why do you think it's vital to include and utilize maybe our own privileges for others?
Oh, that's so important. I believe that as many voices as you can have at the table, different voices, the more likely you are to get it right. That, I mean, one of the examples I use for myself is back when you know, women's lib movement, and we were trying to get a voice. Our husbands and fathers would say, well, you know, we've got your best intentions at heart. You know, we'll take care of you. And it's really hard to tell them, no, thank you. You know, you can't. Because they do have our best intentions at heart, but they see things differently. Their priorities right. are different. And it's the same whether it's race or gender, a preference or culture, ethnicity, whatever it is, you just don't see it the same. And it isn't that one's better than the other, they're just different. And with everybody at the table, we're more likely to consider everybody's interest. So to me, that's the most important thing. Now, as a white woman, what I hope I can do is use some of my privilege to sort of, and I'm sort of asking, you know, let's to improve the lot of others who may not have as much privilege as me, to open doors, because I don't think I can do it for other people, but I think I can open a door, and if somebody wants to walk through it, I'm more than happy to welcome them, you know.
And I think, you know, you hear a lot of today, and I'm sure in generations past, questions of like, why are we still here? Like, why are we still having to to do this? And I mean, a major piece of that is probably because we were not always including everyone at the table. The more you are open to everyone's ideas and everyone's opinions, I think that's the best way to move forward. And like, I think that answers the question why we're still here, because not everyone's included.
That's an amazing point.
I just wanted to say I'm so proud of the city of Charlotte this year, because our city council is about as diverse as it can be. And I'm just so proud to see that we have elected officials who represent more than just one portion of our community.
Definitely, definitely. I think that's a huge like statement. And I think what we saw in this, you know, past like this year's like election, like city council elections all throughout the country, was that so many people, like so many first gens as well, like we did like a post alone about just the first. And so that was with trans women in two different states. We saw a lot of young people like running for office, which was amazing. We saw so many people of color. We saw so many first generation Americans or immigrants like running for office. And that was just like a beautiful thing. And that's really, I think, like you said earlier, Jane, is including so many people and everyone at the table in order for it to trickle down. And then also just representation. You need that so that that can, that alone, I think, opens a door, is having that representation. And I'm really excited to see what Phi Lyles does here in Charlotte. But I think it's just really inspirational and aspirational to just see yourself in a place affecting change, but knowing that someone like you can affect change.
Yeah, that was one of the hard things for my generation of women, was there were no role models.
Yeah,
you know, we were trying to figure it out along the way, and I'll give credit to the men too. It was very confusing for the men I worked with. They didn't know whether to treat me as a boss, as an equal, as a, you know, as a potential date, or, and so I would get all this conflicting advice, you know, you're too nice, you're too mean, you know, dress up, dress down, you know, never bring cookies to the office. I mean, it was just everything. And so in the end, I just decided, well, heck, I'm going to offend somebody no matter what I do, so I'll do what I want, you know, and that sort of took care of it. But yeah, having role models, I think, is one of the most important things. You know, just to, for a child to be able to look up and say, I can be that. And it's a woman as president. Let's hope for that one day. Or a black man as president, which is fantastic, I think. So I think I'm hoping my generation can start. Well, they have started making those kinds of role models, but even more so. And I think that's part of why you're seeing my generation being as vocal as they are. They want to make sure that the younger generation knows that we've been out there fighting quietly, but not anymore.
To kind of jump back to the topic of intersectionality, wondering how in your specific works, I know, Ali, you started to get into the weeds a little bit. So like, let's really dive into the weeds. So how are y'all welcoming like trans women, gender nonconforming, and non-binary folks into the work that you do? And also talking about like how are you including LGBTQ folks and women of color?
Sure. So at the YWCA, we have four main programs. So we have our youth programs, which I talked about, that serve elementary-aged youth in economically disadvantaged neighborhoods. And then we have two transitional housing programs. One is called Women in Transition, and that is a program that serves 66 formerly homeless women as they transition out of homelessness into permanent housing. And then our Families Together program is based off of Women in Transition, the same kind of program, but it's for families of at least three with at least one minor child. We have 10 townhomes, so we can serve 10 families at a time. And then we have our racial justice programming, which right now culminates in we have 2 to 3 events a year where we have community forums or film screenings or discussions where we invite the community in to a safe space to have what could be an uncomfortable conversation. And so those are always free and open to the public, and we serve meals. And then we also have all YWCAs across the United States have an annual Stand Against Racism campaign, which is actually taking place this month. So that is an awareness campaign. They look a little bit differently at every YWCA, but ours, we have our forum on one night. And then the following day in Uptown Charlotte on the corner of Trade and Tryon, we rent out that little park that's up there, and we have musical acts. We have a choir come up. We have some spoken word artists, and we also have this big board where we invite all these, you know, bankers and passersby who are going on their lunch breaks to come by, and we invite them to fill out this piece of paper. It's an orange sheet of paper that gets everyone's attention, and you are invited to take a pledge to stand against racism and how you will do that in your own personal space. So it's kind of a conversation starter and just an awareness campaign. And so that's a fun event that is, I mean, welcome to anyone to join us. And so the ways that we are inclusive, I mean, our Women in Transition program, we've served transgender women before. There aren't any exclusions to that. It's kind of just if you show up and you're qualified, then we'll take you for the program. And the same for families. We don't define family. We've served, you know, single fathers with kids. We've served same-sex couples with kids. So that is just something that we don't define ourselves. So we have our own inclusionary statement, and I wish I had it with me, but I don't. When HB2 was happening, that we put out publicly, because actually one of our state representatives or his campaign or something created this video, and it was when Charlotte created the inclusionary ordinance, and it was kind of like showing all of these local fitness centers and locker rooms that were seeming to be like under threat. And they showed a picture of the YWCA, and our CEO was like, no, we did not give you permission to do that. So she actually like first reached out and had them take our name off of that. And then second, wrote an op-ed about how we don't agree with this at all. So she's very outspoken about how our mission is that we are fighting for peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. So that's really what we mean.
That's a great mission statement. Ours is a little simpler, where we just ask for equality and equity for all. And the Charlotte Women's March is predominantly white women. And that's an issue that we recognize and are working intentionally to step beyond, I guess is the best way to put it. A couple of things we've done was we co-hosted a reception for women elected to office last December. We found something to celebrate. And we partnered with the Black Women's Caucus here in town and co-hosted this reception for women. It was fantastic. I think we had 35 elected officials. It was both current women elected to office and any woman who had served in elected office beforehand. It was marvelous. Mm-hmm. We had about 250 people come, lots more politicians than you'd imagine, but the two groups bonded so well that we were already planning a reception for next year, which we think after the 2018 elections is going to be even bigger. So we're looking forward to that. And it worked incredibly well. And for once we did get, and somebody said to me, it was crazy. It was like, this is the first time a black women's group and a white women's group had gotten together to co-host something. And I'm like, that doesn't seem right. It was so easy. There was nothing to it. You know, right. It's just like we both had the same intention. And we did it as equals. There was not, because one of the questions I've had sometimes is that they say, well, white women come in and take over. So you got to be careful and intentional about making sure that it really is a partnership. The second thing we did was for the Women's March this year, if you went, we had 16 speakers. And I was instrumental in putting together the speakers list. And we intentionally looked for diversity in that. There was a transgender woman. There was a gay woman. There was a Muslim woman, someone from the Latin American Coalition. And it was, I can't even remember all of the people because there were 16 people of all races, religions, and gender preferences, I guess would be the best way to put it. And that was intentional, because people would come up and say, well, why can't we have so-and-so speak? And that person was a wonderful speaker and very important, but we already had enough white women, thank you. Let's go ahead and get other people to speak. And it was a marvelous day. It wasn't like everybody was bored to tears because people didn't know what they were doing. There are people out there who are well-spoken, who have had interesting lives that they can share, and that was something that we were able to give a voice to. So we are actively working, not necessarily, we're inviting everyone to come and join our group, but we also recognize that sometimes it's probably better to partner with another group, right, so that neither one group gets subsumed into the other, but each maintains our own identity and we share what we have to offer. Mm-hmm. As part of the group, we have interest groups where we decided when we started that we weren't going to try to limit and focus on any one thing. If you were interested in something in part of our group and it fit our mission statement, we would go with it. So we have a racial justice group that has been very active in sponsoring programs and reaching out across the racial line. We've got an immigration group. So that brings us to our most important goal for this year, and that is vote. Get people out to vote. Register them to vote. Having sponsoring candidates forum and co-sponsoring candidates forums, and making sure that everyone knows what positions the candidates have. We don't endorse candidates, but we will inform you about what they stand for. That's it.
That's most important, that you know who and why you're voting.
Yeah.
So a statement that you mentioned earlier, Jan, you were just talking about how you all are doing some programming with the Black Women's Caucus, I think you mentioned.
Yes.
And so for me and all of our listeners, just like explicitly, like, why do you think the Women's March and like the YWCA are quote unquote white women organizations?
Probably because we had access to money first. And I guess somebody had asked along the way why it is that with white women have been able to get farther along, I guess, in terms of equality. And my answer to that is, we're in their bedrooms. You know? They're our husbands, our fathers, our sons. So we have more access in that sense to the traditional lines of power. And so that, I believe, is how it is. And because of the privilege that we have gained over the years, we also have more disposable time, free time. And so, you know, when women couldn't get the jobs and didn't have to get the jobs because they were staying home and stuff, we spent a lot of time doing volunteer work. And I think that's something that we can bring forward and be proud of. So I think that's part of it. But that privilege and that access, I hope that we can use to share, you know, to pass forward, so that everybody out there has the same access that we have.
I wouldn't wouldn't call the YWCA like a white woman's organization or movement. The history of the YWCA started like 150 years ago. So definitely at the start, it was the Young Women's Christian Association. And that is actually still our name, but we are not a Christian organization. The way the YWCA started was it was a Christian teaching organization where I think they did in like the youth programs and things like that, taught Christian teachings, but we've completely moved away from that. And actually YWCA USA completely dropped the Christian. They're just YWCA Inc. And so there have been a lot of changes throughout the years, and as far back as 1934, the YWCA USA was encouraging members to speak out against racism and speak out against lynching and mob violence and for interracial cooperation and efforts to protect African-American basic civil rights. And so in 1965 is when our local YWCA was integrated. And it just used to be a lot different. We didn't have our housing programs that served women who were experiencing homelessness. It started out as a place for women to come into the city for a place to stay. It didn't matter who you were. It was an affordable place to stay for women who were coming to the city to work. And so the programs have just evolved over the years. The mission, the racial justice piece of the mission has definitely been amplified. And I think you'll see that if you pay attention to YWCA USA, especially the new CEO of YWCA USA is a Latina woman. There's just a major focus on the racial justice piece of the mission. And I think trying to make that just more loud and just a bigger piece of it. So the goal is to eliminate racism and empower women. And so that, I guess, for us, it will continue to evolve.
So now you all have different collaborations that you've done, and you've spoken about a lot of outreach, Allie, that the YWCA is doing. What do you think your organizations can do in addition to that to have more diversity represented in your organizations? Like, how are you going to, I think, continuously like move forward to have and to fight that stigma? You know, like what I mentioned before of it being like a white woman's organization is a stereotype, you know, of your organizations. So to mm-hmm. reach trans women, LGBTQ people, and even men, and have them a part of your organizations, do you all have anything, you know, in the works?
Well, first of all, we do have an LGBTQ interest group, but it's sort of interesting. The lesbian women who are part of our group, and we have quite a few, are not part of that group. They are just integrated into whatever they're normal people, you know, so they have interest in racial justice or immigration or, you know, get out the vote. So it's sort of funny. We do march in the gay pride parade every year, so we will show support wherever it's needed. But it's interesting where that part of our organization is so well integrated. I don't even know how intentional we need to be about it anymore. It just happens. I think across racial lines, it's a little bit harder for us. And my opinion is that the way to do it is to reach out and participate more in the wonderful activities that are being sponsored by, I know Friendship Missionary Baptist Church has some wonderful programs. I attended a sorority meeting recently that was really interesting about incarceration of women. And so just reaching out and trying to cross that barrier, because we have much more in common than we have differences, but we need an understanding of what those differences are, I think. And the main thing I can say is just be intentional about it, and don't just assume that, you know, if we have this meeting here that everybody's going to show up. No, you reach out and make sure that you're doing what it needs to be done to include others. And just keep working at it, you know. It's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I think, so the YWCA is putting a greater focus on actually trying, because right now we don't have a staff person who is committed to just that work. It's kind of under our philanthropy team. And so it's a priority of our board to actually get a staff person who's committed to outreach and social and racial justice advocacy, because other YWCAs have someone who does that. It's common to have like an advocacy manager or someone like that. And so the way, so that's a goal, and that would be great if when we get there. That all has to do with funding, so that's my job. But the way I think we are intentional now is through our forums and the opportunities that we do provide for the community, where we raise up voices of people of color, and we talk about topics that greatly affect communities of color. And oftentimes a lot of our audience is mostly white. And so I think that's important, though, that we as a white community are becoming more aware of issues and learning more. And I mean, it's always a goal to, you know, to make the room more diverse. But at the same time, I'm happy that the white community is interested in coming to learn about topics like that and educate themselves. And yeah, so it's definitely, it's always a work in progress.
Yeah. I did want to make sure that we just kind of talked about men and kind of what role do you think that men have in advancing gender equality? Because I think a lot of times in these conversations, we focus so much on women and what women are doing. But men are the ones with all the power in our society, right? So what role do men have?
First of all, I think that women's rights are everyone's rights. So I think that sort of is an inclusive thing. And most of us, since we are sexual beings, most women have men in their lives, whether it's a father or a husband or a partner or a child. And we start with them and try to, I know my two boys have heard a lot from me over the years and recognize the rants when they come, to influence that way. I think that men are welcome. But just as I've heard minority women say that white women tend to take over, I've also felt that white men tend to take over when they come in. It's almost like the pecking order, you know, just gets established. So I don't want to exclude men, but I want to make sure that the women and the women's movement, the women are the ones who are in control. And we will take all the help we can get, but it's our game.
I agree with that. I think men can play a great supportive role and use their power to influence other men. You know, once we have the more educated and the more men see our point of view, then I think they'll listen to each other maybe more. But yeah, I think men as a support.
Yeah. I want to add one more thing to that, and that is, I get back to the word intentional. You have to be intentional about what you do. And with my experience, there was one man that I worked with who we had started working together 20 years earlier. And when I moved to Charlotte, I called him up and said, you know, you ever thought about opening an engineering office in Charlotte? And he remembered me from then. And he was intentional about hiring me for the office because he knew me. He was willing to take the chance. And I was the only, I think there was one other woman, they kept firing her for no reason, but I was the only professional woman, senior woman in the company at that time. Everybody else were men. And over the years, he supported me and stuck up for whatever the questions are, because it's unintentional, some of the assumptions. You know, well, I'm 30 years on the job and they're still wondering whether I'm going to come into work the next day, you know, because they expect I'm not serious about my career. Well, that's ingrained because certainly someone like me, 30 years, you know, I was 60 at the time, I guess, looks like the kind of person that should be a retired grandmother or whatever, and they would just assume that was my role. I get mistaken for the office assistant, you know, when I'm running the office. And so that is preconceived notions. That has nothing to do with me, but that's the barrier. And I think men can be intentional about saying that person has, you know, the qualities that will work in this job. Yeah, maybe I can't talk football with that person the way I want, because you really do want to hire people you enjoy hanging out with, kind of thing. You want a good office environment. But you need to be intentional and say, that person's interesting for a different reason. And then you can get an office where everyone is, you've got all people's represented. The office that I ran, we had, it was a very small office, but we had, well, first of all, we had two African-American women engineers in it, which people always go, we can't find them. Well, I found two. We had an immigrant who was here. We helped him get his green card. We did have a couple of white guys, and we had a young white woman who was incredibly good engineer. So it can be done. I mean, it doesn't. All you have to do is look and be willing to take the chance on somebody. And in this day and age, you're not taking much of a chance. Maybe you have to do a little more coaching, because the workforce, the work environment may not be as amenable to them as it is to white men, but that's not so hard to do.
Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with us today. We're gonna wrap up. We're just really excited, and it's an honor to just, you know, have open dialogue with people in this community and voices that are different from our own. I think it was just important, I think, for Sky and I to make sure that this conversation about feminism and within the community is inclusive, but I think to kind of pose a question to people who may be in power, that they can be just as impactful and influential in allowing more seats and diversifying within the conversation about just representation overall. So we're really thankful, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.